up.
It's Mike Shope.
You might be mocking me or you might be staunchly agreeing with me. I can't tell.
I'm mocking you.
And the Bulldog.
What is Fozzie Bear's role in this production?
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
You see, or maybe just sort of know from having heard it a number of times, June 1st, like in football, June 1st is a significant date on the calendar. So trades can happen. But there's also, you hear post-June 1st. But it isn't really post-June 1st. It's post-359 on June 1st, I believe.
That's right.
It's now. It's 4 o'clock on June 1st. Now we can have our fun.
That's the action hour. 4 p.m. is the
this
action
is it?
Hour. It's the, well, in the almost, right? All the significant days in the league like this that are like player movement oriented, like 4 p.m. is when that the new league year starts at 4 p.m. on that day the free agency begins. Okay, the market's open. So 4 p.m. is the...
So this is it right now. This is the moment.
This is it.
The ball just dropped.
Right.
You're saying.
Let me refresh Twitter to see if A.J. Brown's been traded. Nothing yet.
I'm waiting to hear.
Yeah. Like Zach says, we'll let you know. It would be kind of rude of us to know that this information is available and not share it. That would be bad, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, so isn't it exciting, everybody? 4 o'clock on June 1st has arrived.
No.
And so would Myles Garrett, do you know, would Myles Garrett have been a move that needed to wait until today?
I don't know.
Yes.
What they did with the contract, I just know it made it possible for this to happen. So I would imagine it's the same. Like, I'll bet it hasn't been official until 4 o'clock, that trade. The teams have agreed to it, so everyone's announcing it, but I think it would probably post now, post 4 p.m.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Just for the, yeah, because they're splitting up that cap hit two different, over this year and next year, which is the significance of the June 1 designation. Right? If you've got, 40 some million dollars before June 1st, that all comes now. You wait until now, you can split that and spread it out over this year and next year, which is how that'll work. So,
did you get the time you needed to explain whatever that was really meant as when you talked about like sort of thinking that maybe you're less high on the Bills than consensus?
No, we haven't really dug in on
I've thought about it a few times, but
yeah.
I don't feel that I've really heard the argument.
I don't want to... I definitely am at least a little skeptical. I don't want to overdo it. But because I'm just a little shook. I just,
by what?
Just the way the offseason began, the moves that were made. And I just don't assume that the beat goes on just because of Josh Allen. Like, I recognize they're probably going to continue to be a contending team here. So I'm not expecting them to, like, the bottom to fall out or anything. Because I think there's enough of an advantage to having that player that it makes enough of a difference in enough games that, you're going to be decent. But I just think there's a lot that probably gets taken for granted because of Allen's excellence that McDermott was responsible for that I'm just not assuming is going to seamlessly be all lined up and perfect. They had really, there was Diggs stuff, right? But even that hardly swallowed them. Like they did a good job of sort of staying out of just anything that could potentially be messy. And this is not to say that they absolutely will end up there. I'm just not assuming that Brady is going to have everything is buttoned up and that the guys are going to respond the same way and that the whole thing is going to be as tight as it was. I hope it is. I mean, I'm obviously rooting for Brady, but I just think it's a lot to just assume it's all going to be seamless. Like, it's a new head coach. It's a big deal. But McDermott did a lot of building the infrastructure here.
we don't even know from recent years what it means. Like for all those years where we felt like we had a new coach every 2 years or 3 years and the Sabres were the same thing. Now it's like, oh, wow, what does this mean? And he was here. We don't even know yet. We have to talk about it some more. Flesh it out, Bulldog.
Mm-hmm.
With us now is Will Kunkel out of Houston. Recently had a sit-down with DJ Moore that we're interested in, and the Bills and Texans, who have been kind of rivals for a few years. The Bills have not had any success in Houston, and they will go back to Houston week one in 2026. Will, Mike, and Chris here. Thanks for joining us.
Mike, Chris, what's up, boys? I was going to say, for a rivalry, you know, the other side's got to win every now and then.
My son is a Texans fan for reasons beyond my understanding, and his first game was against Houston, and Davis Mills played, and the Bills won, I think, 40-0 in the rain a few years ago. But, you know, who remembers that, right? That doesn't count.
No, it was the sack session that was last year.
And the year before that wasn't so great either for Allen.
Yeah. I really don't understand how my guy ended up with Houston. Yeah. I mean, nothing against Houston, just sort of random. And he had a watch.
Like a fathering problem up there.
Maybe.
I'm not here to judge.
There you go, Will. You're
no, that
right
might be right.
Now.
I need to look in the mirror. But he had a Watson jersey, and it's the only time I told him he couldn't wear something to school is when that happened. And like, you know what? Let's dad.
This is not a flag you want to be flying right now.
To Will's
right?
point about my, you know, whatevers as a father, like this is one where I said, all right, you know, I know better here, I think.
I think a J.P. Lawson jersey would even be better at that point.
Anybody? Well, a lot of other guys, but yeah. Anyway. Well, Will, let's start with the upcoming season and that week one game. How do you feel about the Texans' chances this year?
Well, I think it all comes down to the offense. Like, we all know what their defense is. We know it's going to be a top five defense. Obviously, injuries aside, that's always the caveat. But we know what you're going to get from the defense. We don't know what we're going to get from the offense. It comes down to whether they can protect C.J. Stroud and whether they can move bodies to run the ball. They want to be a downhill running team, but they didn't have the ability to do that. So they had no identity last season. It was like they threw spaghetti at the wall every single week trying to see what fit, and they would always rely on the defense to just keep them in a game long enough. My phrase going into last season, and it's going to be the same going into this season, is can the offense suck less? I'm not telling you to score 35 points a game. All I'm saying is control the clock, control the field, and score when you're in the red zone if you manage to get there. Let's just start crawling, then we'll start walking, and then we'll worry about the big picture stuff. But they're going to be there as long as their defense is healthy, because defense keeps you in games. And I think they match up favorably with the Bills just because of that, of what the Bills do well versus what they don't do well, although I do think the Bills have a better outlook long-term and their successes because of Josh Allen, of course.
Yeah. How much has Stroud carried around the way last season went? The playoffs were tough for him, and have been other years too. Like, is there, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of radical, crazy fan opinions, but like how much of his failure and the team's failure should Stroud be carrying? In your view?
It's a great question. And I think the playoff failure, a lot really rests on his shoulders in regards to why they lost. Because he was not a guy that took care of the ball. He was not a guy that didn't lose the game. He didn't take care of the ball at all, and he lost the game. You don't lose a game by yourself in the NFL. Like, it's really hard to do. But this was kind of close. And I think he's aware of that. I think he knows that. I think he's had his humbling moments in the NFL because he came in as a rookie and took it over. Like, all the headlines are positive. All the outlook was great. He went on podcasts. He put himself in the top five of quarterbacks when he was asked where he ranked in the NFL. And I got no problem with that. Like, do that. Do talk your smack. Be who you want to be after you have a great season. But then realize that now everyone's got film on you. Everyone's got a target on you. Now you've got to back it up. And there's expectations on your team. Because there were no expectations when he came in the NFL that the Texans were actually going to be good. We thought, I mean, okay, maybe 5-6 wins. And then it was like, holy crap, they made the playoffs. Now the expectations are real. How do you perform under that pressure? He didn't do that in the playoffs. But none of this stuff happens in a vacuum. Like, he didn't just play horribly because the protection was really good and they had a great running game and because Nico was out there. Like, they had a lot of injuries. The protection was horrible. Like, there's a lot of things that go wrong for someone to play poorly. It's not all on him, But the way that he operates, he's going to wear that. But it's also not as bad as some insane fans think that when he cut his hair, he did it because he was depressed. Like, that's nuts. Guys, look at a picture 5 years ago. He didn't have the dreads. The dreads are new to him in his life. He's just going back to what he was. And it's a better look for him, frankly, I think. And, like, don't read into everything. Like, fans are insane. There was a game, I think it was after the Bills game, actually, when Davis Mills got the game ball, and there was a freeze frame, which means there's a whole video, but there's a freeze frame of CJ not looking thrilled. He's just sitting there listening, and everyone's like, he's not even happy for Davis. He wants this team to fail. Like, that's an insane position to take, because CJ Stroud is hands and shoulders better than Davis Mills. It's his team. He's the starter. It's not even a conversation. So to turn that into a narrative is nuts. The way the season ended, you can't get it out of your mouth until you play again, and you can't deny how poorly it went. So I think he's going to have a much better season because the offensive line's got better. The running game should ideally get better. And hopefully Nick Caley, the offensive coordinator, has a better clue of how to put together a game plan and call plays.
Bills and Texans week one in Houston. Will Kunkel is our guest. We know that you want us to get into that 2015 Bills win over the Texans in which Marcus Easley made a couple of plays. I'm not even sure that's right. But we're not there yet in this conversation. Very interesting to hear about the fan dynamics with Stroud. Like, he's a high pick. The Bills in their playoff drought years, and we go back at least that far, well before that here, you know, they just dabbled with different quarterbacks, but none of them really had you mentioned Lossman, actually, sort of funny. None of them really had the pedigree of a Stroud, and that changes the discourse, doesn't it? Like, and plus the rookie year that he had. So I understand that you're saying, well, that there are fans, maybe even most, who are like kind of on the edge when it comes to him this year. Houston, however, has won playoff games 3 years in a row, second to only the Bills, who have done it 6 years in a row, and we don't have banners for that. So it's interesting to think about, like, what's on the line, I guess, is really the bottom line question with Stroud this year.
Well, I think his goal, if he doesn't get a deal before the season starts, just starting from the ground level, you know, again, like we talked about, he needs to take care of the ball and not lose games. And then from there, slowly but surely, be a guy that is trusted in the big moment to take care of the ball and then make plays, go out there and make game-winning plays. And he's done that before, so I don't want it to sound like he's, you know, trying to figure out the NFL and what to do to be successful. Not only did that in his rookie year, he's done it his entire career. It just was inconsistent. But was it, again, like, fans are so irrational to where if you don't know the game extremely well, you just look at the head of the snake and that's got to be the quarterback, right? Well, it's not really. You don't have success as a quarterback without the offensive line and without an offensive game plan. And just for anyone that cares, they came out of a bye week against Seattle with a chance to prove something. And got their ass kicked. And it had nothing to do with C.J. Stroud. It had everything to do with the lack of game plan, how to attack the Seattle's defense. And those problems are significantly larger than what you have a quarterback, because the quarterback's not going to be good if those foundational pieces aren't performing. So for him this season, all he's got to do is be a guy that says, all right, I'm a starter in the NFL, check. Top 15, probably, check for sure. And then if he has the support, he could be up to a top 10 type quarterback. So I don't think it's a matter of him getting paid. It's a matter of the two sides, David Mulligetta, his agent, and the Texans agreeing on the value. Because, as you guys know, you can't just fire a coach and have no replacement. You got to know where you're going next. And with CJ, you've got somebody. And with this defense, you're not going to be bad enough to pick in top five. So you better try to figure out a way to make CJ comfortable and have success.
Well, speaking of being comfortable and having success, you've already referenced a couple times, can they do a better job in front of him? And so that means a new left guard in Wyatt Teller, formerly a Bill, a new right tackle in the form of Braden Smith, and a rookie center. It's mini camp and it's underwear. So, I mean, to ask what the early returns are on that seems pretty stupid. So I won't ask you that, but what are your expectations for the three-fifths of a new offensive line?
It's interesting. So CJ talked last week at the podium, and I thought he said something very telling if you pay attention. And he said that the culture is starting to build right now with the offense. And that's important because the offense has never had a culture. It's never had an identity. The defense has had a strong culture. The building had a culture change when D'Amico Ryans was brought in and CJ and Will Anderson Jr. And the defense has an identity. The offense has never had that. Was it what we saw year one with CJ and Bobby Slowick? Well, then they got rid of Bobby Slowick. Then they bring in Nick Cayley. They can't do anything successfully well. Like, you have no idea what they're going to do every game in, game out, because they don't know what they're going to do game in and game out. So I think culture-wise, they now have the most, at least from an eye test, the most formidable large guys on the offensive line that they've ever had. Like, they've got guys that look like they can move bodies, and they talk the right talk. Laremy Tunsil was addition by subtraction when they got rid of him, because yes, he was a great pass blocking left tackle, but he didn't practice, he didn't sacrifice, and he didn't want to run block, and he never protected his quarterback when it came to him getting late hits or anything like that. Like, bad leader in that room. So now they're just revamping this whole thing slowly but surely as they go. I thought they should have been more aggressive in the draft last year. That's neither here nor there. They've certainly gotten closer to where they want to be. Whether or not Kalen Rutledge plays center, that's going to be the real test for him as a rookie. So I think they're on the right track, and they've really started to change that culture and the vibe in that room.
With Will Kunkel in Houston, Mike Schopen and the Bulldog here, we wanted to talk about DJ Moore as well, who just a couple of days ago was on your podcast, Kicking It with Kunkel. How do you know DJ Moore?
DJ and I worked together. I said worked together. He was with the Panthers, and I was covering the Panthers in Charlotte. So we were there. He came in the league the same time I started covering the league. We got to know each other. Our families got to know each other. We got close and have stayed in touch a bunch, clearly, ever since then. So he came on the show. We chopped it up. We got a tour of the house. We hung out on YouTube. And, man, y'all are getting a good one, a great family, a good wide receiver. He will play through anything. People have no idea the injuries that he's played through. So if he doesn't play, know that it's not good. And one thing I will say is that he took a lot of blame on that last play, that interception from Caleb Williams. And that was a play that was installed on Wednesday. No one really knew what they were doing, and it went awry, and he took all the flack because it looked like he wasn't hustling when in reality he was where he was supposed to be. So you guys are getting a good one.
I mean, it's got to be close to a given that he's tough like that, because he never misses. Like, his career, he's been super – he's on the field, like DJ Moore. So there's no doubt about that. I wonder – I'm not trying to push back against you here, Will. Like you said, great family, good player. I wonder how good a player that is, this is, for the Bills. I mean, the one thing about DJ Moore, his whole career, and I respect this, is he doesn't have elite quarterback. And, you know, we have guys like this. We had Allen Robinson for this. We have DJ Moore for this. Certain guys, they just seem a little bit trapped. Last year is different. I mean, the year he had with Justin Fields is off the charts. So, I don't know. Like, you're probably hearing a lot of that, too, because this is what we say after this trade. It's like, all right, fine, Josh Allen, okay. I'm in fantasy circles, and, you know, people are going to be more excited about him, I guess, certainly than earlier in his career. So, how high is the ceiling, in your opinion?
Well, it depends how Joe uses them. He and Joe have a history together. Joe was there with the Panthers when he was the offensive coordinator, and DJ was a wide receiver for him. We talked about that as well in the episode, but it depends how you use DJ. DJ's got the ability to kind of do everything. And if he's in an offense, which he is now with Joe, that's been around, that's established, that has an identity, that knows what they're doing, he's not with a rookie quarterback. Like, there was a lot of movement and a lot of change in Carolina, whether it be Matt Rhule was his coach, Ron Rivera was his coach, Kyle Allen, Taylor Heineke, a bad Cam Newton, Teddy Bridgewater quarterbacks. I mean, Caleb Williams as a rookie trying to learn, a horrible offensive line, and he still produced every single year. And I'm not trying to carry DJ Moore's water, but I will say, going to a situation with an elite quarterback, a guy that's called plays in that building for a period of time where there's a culture established and there's an offensive game plan established, I think we'll do wonders for him. And he's willing to do almost everything, including come out of the backfield like he did last year.
How did you have it? I haven't had a chance to listen to this or watch this appearance he made on your podcast, Will. I'm curious if the subject at all came up that, you know, Yeah, his resume is he's never had a good quarterback, really, until last year. Williams kind of broke through, and suddenly DJ Moore's a spare part. I mean, he lands in a great spot here with Josh Allen. So, you know, certainly Allen is proven more in the league than Caleb Williams. But I wonder if the guy felt a little bit like, I finally have a guy, and problem is I'm not the guy for the guy, because they've got other guys that they have drafted and developed, and so he's getting passed. And I don't know, I just wonder if that, how much that dinged him emotionally, if at all.
Oh, I think it definitely did. Like, it bothered him, because whenever he was called on, he made plays. I mean, he's got the biggest plays in Bears history against the Packers. Like, every time the ball was thrown his way and his number was called, he came up with huge numbers and huge plays. So I know it did, and understandably so. But also, I get it. Like, if Ben Johnson, for whatever reason, wanted to go to his players that he drafted and his guys, which we see all the time in this business, then okay. Now the Bills clearly want him. They want to showcase him, or else they wouldn't have gotten him. And the Bills, I mean, let's be honest, like, they haven't had a number one wide receiver since Steph Diggs left. This time they finally do. It'll be interesting how they use him.
Yeah. Left for Houston in a trade a couple of years ago. Will, I mean, if you don't mind my asking, because it's the news of the day, what do you think about this Myles Garrett trade?
Man, crazy. Kind of saw it coming from last year, because he demanded the trade and they played through not wanting to be there, just a bad team. I love it from the standpoint of, we get to see one of the best players of our generation on a relevant team. Like, the Browns just waste careers every single year. So to be able to see Myles Garrett somewhere relevant, I think will be a lot of fun. Imagine if now Aaron Donald's like, I'll come back. Yeah. Like, that would be insane to even think about. But what a haul the Browns got. Oh, my gosh, to get what they got in return and burst and all the picks. Good on them. I can't wait to see how they blow it and continue to destroy their franchise.
There's some chance of that, I suppose, to be frank.
I mean, do we trust that, like, if you're a Browns fan, you're sitting there and be like, oh, hell yeah, now we can really go after it, finally. Like,
no, you know what? I would say this, because I tend to lean toward teams like the Browns in trades like these. I mean, I can't quit the draft capital stuff. If the Browns weren't the Browns, and they were even the Titans, or they were some team that's relatively new to losing, they would get a lot more credit, probably. Yeah. And I'm not saying that's fair or unfair, because it's, you know, talking about how a Browns fan feels, I mean, you're asleep already. You're not even necessarily alert to this, because it's just been so many times. We have the Sabres, who got good this year, but there were so many of these kind of moves where, like, okay, well, wake me up when it matters. And, I mean, that could be Watson this year. I don't know.
If they had a competent front office, I think everyone would be like, holy crap, hell yeah, let's go, versus, right. I mean, okay, we'll see what happens.
At least you got the player here in this trade, and not just picks.
Right, right.
At least you got the player, and there's a lot to like about him. So,
you mentioned the Sabres. Quick question for y'all.
Please.
Do you guys view Buffalo as a Bills or Sabres town?
It's really not one or the other.
Yeah.
That's our list.
I mean, the Bills are a bigger deal. I mean, they're in the NFL, which is a bigger deal.
Fair.
But, you know, around here, Will, I'll take a kick at this answer. I mean, it sort of woke us all up this year, having the Sabres, you know, get relevant again and sort of re-energize the fan base. It's always very much to me been a city thing versus suburbia to me. Like, the Bills planted their flag in Orchard Park, 25 minutes south of the city, and they've got a great scene there, but to me, like, I live in the city, and I've lived in the city almost the entirety of my adult life. Things that make the city itself percolate always resonate more with me. And the Sabres are a city thing. They're, you know, little taverns in that part of town. It's just a different thing than, you know, the NFL feels more like a really nice mall. And, you know, the Sabres are more like a city sports team to me. Like, it's just because the NFL is just so big. So, I don't know. That's a try at an answer anyway.
We're definitely both.
Yeah.
I mean, no shortage of love for either team. And we just finally got to experience the Sabre excitement, to put
y'all
it mildly.
Y'all deserved
again.
It.
Yeah, right? 15 years without a playoff appearance. That's crazy.
Yeah. Real quick before you go, Will, like, what is it, division title again or bust? Like, who's in the rearview mirror for Houston?
Oh, I think they have to take the next step. Like, they have to get to an AFC Championship game. They've never done it. And I know it's not, that's not a realistic thing to say, but when you have this defense, like, it's not easy to win an AFC Championship. Like, it's just not, despite what fans think. However, playing that Saturday 3 o'clock game year in and year out, only to go on the road, like, you need to put yourself in position to have home field advantage through the playoffs. That way, your defense can show up and show out like they did against that Bills team last year. Like, that was a buzzsaw to run into for the Bills. Like, it was just like a bad recipe. And if they don't put themselves in position and they can't do it again, then the thing is with the Texans right now, they have an entity in that defense that they're wasting if they can't get over the hump because the offense is so bad. It's not like you're asking the offense to score 40 a game. You've got the entity that is elite in defense. Now you just need to be average at best on a consistent basis to get to the next level. But as I was saying, it's like looking at a pretty girl coming down the street. It can be good from far, and then all of a sudden you get real close. And you're like, damn, far from good. These Texans are under a microscope right now. So you're seeing all the imperfections, and that's where they're tweaking right now. That's what they're doing on the offensive line. But that's also what is on display the most in those games. So in the biggest moments against the best teams, are those flaws going to show themselves, or have they fixed those and can they win those games because they're now at that next level? It's so easy to go from 3 wins to like 8 wins. It's so hard to go from 10 to 13 or 13 to 14, whatever it is, because the fine tuning is so difficult.
Will Kunkel, our guest, check out his podcast, A Sit Down, about a half an hour with DJ Moore. Thanks for your time, Will. Hope we talk again, maybe before week one.
I appreciate you, boys. Take care. Thanks for having me again.
You're welcome. Our pleasure. Will Kunkel at Will Kunkel V on Twitter. X, if you prefer.
Going with that. All right.
Let's take a break. 803-0550 for your calls. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here, WGR.